Keine zwei Trader sind gleich. Ob du von Analysen oder von Instinkt geleitet wirst, Kraken Pro wurde für dich entwickelt, nach deinen Ansprüchen. Das heißt individuell anpassbare Layouts, jede Menge Trading-Widgets und nutzerdefinierte Watchlists genau dort, wo du sie brauchst. Besuche pro.kraken.com. Trading Crypto ohne Kompromisse. Keine Anlageberatung. Crypto Trading birgt ein Verlustrisiko. Paywood Europe Solutions Limited, tätig als Kraken, ist durch die Central Bank of Ireland autorisiert.
Fehlt nur noch das letzte Puzzleteil.
Hallöchen, hier sind wieder deine Bauchschmerzen mit Krämpfen und Blähungen.
Och nö, ich will mich auf meine Familie konzentrieren, nicht auf meine Verdauungsprobleme. Jetzt die Gestoprid mit Pfefferminzöl und bald geht's meinem Darm wieder gut.
Ruhe im Darm, Freiheit im Alltag. Die Gestoprid.
Hol dir alle Infos auf digestoprid.de. Die Gestoprid ist ein zugelassenes pflanzliches Arzneimittel bei Reizdarmbeschwerden.
Zu Risiken und Nebenwirkungen lesen Sie die Packungsbeilage und fragen Sie Ihre Ärztin, Ihren Arzt oder in Ihrer Apotheke.
Welcome to the Richard Serrett Show for Monday, June the 16th. Hold on to your gas cans, folks. Canada's green crusade is about to crash into a global oil storm. As Israel and Iran trade missiles, oil prices are spiking, and the GC summit in Kananaskis is sweating energy security. Meanwhile, Environment Minister Julie DeBrusen doubling down on banning gas-powered cars by 2035, a plan as delusional as expecting EVs to power through a Canadian winter. Dan McTagg, president of Canadians for Affordable Energy, is next to skewer this anti-car, anti-reality EV mandate. He'll also unpack the Middle East mess that's jacking up oil prices. Is Mark Carney's Echo Dream doomed? That's coming up next.
Hey, denk dran, dass auch dein Immunsystem Hunger hat. Und probier's mal mit den Gesundheitszielen zur Ernährung in der App Auka Navida. Hol dir Tipps, Rezepte und Challenges für dein gesünderes Ich. Jetzt die App Auka Navida downloaden und loslegen. Auka Plus. Aus Liebe zur Gesundheit.
I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it. Stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
We must not allow ourselves to be intimidated. Our task is not only to win the battle, but to win the war.
Stop repeating, we're not in Kansas anymore.
Take a look at this country through her eyes if you really want to see something. You'll see the whole parade of what man's carved out for himself after centuries of fighting.
You're out of order! You're out of order! The whole trial is out of order!
You have meddled with the primal forces of nature! And you will atone!
Seeking truth and justice in a battleground of deception and corruption, this is The Richard Serrett Show.
Welcome back. Dan McTagg is here, president of Canadians for Affordable Energy. Dan, always great to spend some time with you. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing great. A lot of items to discuss and never a shortage of good news on the energy front, that's for sure.
I've been following the situation in Israel and Iran very closely. It looks like the regime in Iran is about to topple. I believe Russian President Vladimir Putin has basically told the mullahs, boys, pack your bags. It's time to come to Moscow. But with oil prices jumping to nearly $73 a barrel after the strikes, analysts predicting high 70s to low 80s, how is this spike going to hit consumers at the pump?
Well, in a number of ways, obviously, it's a good news story because it means that Canadian oil gets a lot more. Imagine if we had more pipelines to carry that to international markets. You wouldn't be talking deficits or debts in this country because we'd be probably bringing in an extra $30-40 billion a year. But hey, what's a few billion bucks when you believe in modern monetary theory? And for a guy who's a prime minister with a background in banking, it's surprising. It's in fact stunning that he hasn't made that a priority. In other words, we need to get more Canadian oil and natural gas to global markets rather than giving it to the Americans in raw form. We then turn around LNG the whole thing. But for oil and for gasoline, yeah, we're looking at some increases. We haven't been hard hit yet, maybe 3 or 4 cents a liter. But the real impact has not really come in yet. And I think that's because there's a sense that unless there is a regime change overnight, It's going to be a long, drawn-out affair. Now, I know, of course, that President Donald Trump is saying he's heading back to Washington, cutting short his meeting in Calgary at the G7. I didn't think he was going to stay that long to begin with, to address the situation in the Middle East. Perhaps a peace deal, who knows? But at this stage, I don't see the mullahs picking up and taking off. They've been entrenched, for 50, 49 years, 47 years, 79, 80. So I'm not sure that they're going to be willing to pack up that easily. And yes, they've been militarily, at least from an aviation point of view, they've been put in their place. And there's a threat that if they try something on a naval blockade in the Persian Gulf, home to one third of all the oil in the world, that there would be consequences, not just from Israel, but from others. But for now, it looks very tense. And I think markets have been, well, put it bluntly, been very behaved, they've been very muted. They're not really taking this as much of a big deal for them. And it's odd to see it. It's a nothing burger. Perhaps they all believe we're driving electric vehicles.
How exposed is Canada to disruptions in the Strait of Hormuz? I mean, we don't import oil from Iran because of the sanctions, but we do import oil from Iraq and Saudi Arabia. I mean, we've got the Strait of Hormuz, as you mentioned, over a quarter of global seaborne oil flows through there, something like 21 barrels a day. How exposed are we to disruptions in the Strait?
Well, 21 million barrels represents roughly the entire consumption on a daily basis of the United States. So you're basically looking at a significant market being knocked out in terms of supplying what is needed. And for all those out there, it's about the past 10 years trying to dream this idea that somehow oil is going to go away and that we're not going to use it and that we're going to see a great reset. Well, the joke's on them because, of course, oil is going to continue to drive new economies as well as sustain existing ones because it's used in everything. But for most, I think the issue of where oil prices go and the effect that one third of, Qatar, Bahrain, the United Arab Emirates, you mentioned Saudi Arabia, Iraq, Iran itself, pretty significant area as far as the flow of product. And so while we can maybe make up some of that, we can't do it overnight. And the effect of shutting that down, were Iran to be successful in, say, using the choke point as it has in the past at the Straits of Hormuz, Man al Bab, that area, that, all bets are off. We haven't seen that yet. There's no indication that's going to happen. But I can't see Iran and its regime just simply giving up overnight because they've been surgically and tactfully hit in several areas. They're not down yet, and it's going to take some time before we get to the bottom of this, unless Iran wants to come to the peace table, and I don't see that happening for several days now.
It's interesting. The army is nowhere to be seen now. Essentially, the Israelis have free reign, at least in the airspace, over Iran. So with the oil markets trembling this way, we get around to the EVs, and the question as to why the Carney government is pushing a 2035 gas car ban that 66% of Canadians, according to some polls, call unrealistic. This was an Ipsos poll.
Well, 66%, you would have to think that maybe half of those people voted Liberal. So what were they voting for? Elbows up or, more stupidity when it comes to the electric vehicle madness, which we've been talking about here at Canadians for Affordable Energy for the better part of 3 or 4 years, and pointed out the folly of what this would do. Look, not just taking aside my old personal cap, political, interest in consumers, media relations for a tiny little company called Toyota Canada. Used to be number 5 when I left in 93, now number 1 and number 1 exporter of automotive parts from Canada to, and finished vehicles to the United States. Also number 1 in the world. Didn't go down this rabbit hole of, accepting corporate grift as GM, Stellantis, to some extent Ford, VW, and all the other folks out there who don't mind. If you're going to give them money, then they're going to stand up in line for it. But every one of them, without a fail, has now said we have to back off, not to mention the amount of money we put out in batteries. At the end of the day, if you're going to force car dealers on January 1st to begin selling EVs on a quota basis that for every every 5 vehicles they sell, one has to be electric vehicle, well, that's madness. It's hard to even get a 10% take up in Canada, except for the folks out there who love free stuff, and that would be Quebec and British Columbia. Quebec used to have very generous subsidies, up to $12,000, $13,000, $14,000. BC wasn't very far behind. But those subsidies are coming to an end because there's no free lunch. Governments can't borrow more money in order to subsidize the building, subsidize the infrastructure, and subsidize the buying of what amounts to over-glorified golf carts from driving around. I'm not taking away from their importance. In some areas in California, I'm sure it makes sense. In some downtown areas, it's wonderful. But I say I'd be better use public transit. More importantly, the country doesn't have the ability to support this. There is no, with the United States having said, you know, everyone said, well, Trump and tariffs. I was more concerned about Trump's and EV mandates. He said he's going to get rid of them through the campaign. He made good on it at the beginning of the first week he was in office. And, and of course, the past few days, he's formalized the waiver, the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency waiver that followed the California mandate and basically said, nuts, we're not following that. In one fell swoop, 90% of all the vehicles that are made in Ontario that are sent to the United States can now only be internal combustion engines because nobody in their right mind in the United States is going to buy one. If they are, they're going to buy it from China or they're going to buy it from someone else or they're going to an e-bike or whatever the case may be. I'm not trying to be, in some way disrespectful of people who drive those things. I mean, there's all sorts of options, but you don't shove them down people's throats and demand that they drive a certain type of vehicle. So 2020, it has to be 20%. 2030 has to be 2026, 27, 30%. It goes up 10% every year until 2035 when no internal combustion engine can be sold in Canada. That's insane. It's a recipe for disaster. And for the Minister of Environment and all her colleagues in the Liberal caucus and Carney himself not to make absolute declarations on this, well, it's just war. Because at the end of the day, you're going to destroy the most important, vital automotive manufacturing sector here in Ontario. And by the way, Doug Ford, get with the program, live up to the Ford tradition and get more of these internal combustion engines. That's why Ford in Oakville isn't building EVs. They're building big honking F-250s because that's what the public wants. And well, damn it, they're built with very little emissions.
Yeah, let's, I mean, perhaps the minister, DeBrusen, needs a bit of a reality check. You were mentioning, you know, we're not equipped for this. Let's talk about the infrastructure required. We need, according to some estimates, 679,000 EV charging ports by 2040. Right now we have 30,000. I mean, and then we look at this unpreparedness clashing with rising oil prices, global instability. Weigh in on that, if you would, the lack of charging stations.
What are you going to get the minerals? Talk to an electrician. Don't talk to politicians. Don't talk to technocrats. Don't talk to grifters. Talk to an electrician. I've talked to dozens of my family, by the way. Whitby is several, very well known. McTague Electric been there for years. They laugh. This is mathematically, hysterically impossible. And, you know, if you're going to have all these copper wires laid down in the ground and you're going to, you know, be able to connect everybody, level one, two, and three chargers at, you know, anywhere from $20,000 to $300,000 a pop, where the hell's the money going to come from? And Richard, we have to have an adult put your pants on discussion, not act like thumb-sucking dolts walking around pretending that we can invent these things and say it's all wonderful and it's great and let's give me more granola, you know, for my little cup here. At the end of the day, reality is hitting this country really hard. People don't have work. The amount of money required to electrify all of Canada, $2-3 trillion, that's more than our entire GDP of this country. So, I mean, a simple reflection on what it takes to achieve the objective that they've set established in their nonsensical EV mandate suggests this thing is going to be heading very quickly to the dustbin of history. And if Liberals want to hold on to it and their elbows up, friends, good luck with that. Because when you're bankrupt and the country can't pay for these things, what the hell are you going to do? You're going to drop maybe EV. What I think could happen here, Richard, let me put it on, go on a limb here. Maybe they will drop the tariffs on Chinese-made EVs. Why? China prepared for this for the past 15, 20 years. They can make them faster, better, cheaper, whatever the case may be, and they can do it regardless of environmental concerns. When it's all said and done, either we continue to hurt canola farmers, we hurt the rest of the economy, and while we're elbows up to Donald Trump, we seem to be quite receptive to the idea that China could slap us around anytime they want. Let's get back to doing what we do best at, build the internal combustion engine, make it efficient, keep Canadian jobs in Canada. And if America doesn't want to buy them, there's other countries that will buy damn good, efficient vehicles. That's where we need to put our incentives and our effort. But let's get the major automotive companies to do what companies like Toyota have done and say, we'll lead the way in technology. We don't need grift and we don't need subsidies. Stand out of the way, Ottawa. liberals, trendies, and let us do our job. We're the experts when it comes to automotive, not your wishful thinking, you know, wacky science and faux science that says you can, everybody should drive an electric vehicle. You know, Richard, 100 years ago, we had electric vehicles. They're gone. There's a good reason for that.
You mentioned the subsidy. $300 billion, that's the price tag to prepare for the EV mandate. That's $11,500 per vehicle. I mean, how can they possibly justify that? You know, when our wallets are already strained.
$1.3 trillion in the hole. You're already paying $70 to $75 billion a year just to support the national debt that you've incurred, which, by the way, went from $400 billion all the way to $1.3 billion in the span of 8 or 9 years. Now, you can blame all that on COVID and international circumstances or other countries have done it, but no. This was a forced error. You created this problem. This is a domestic problem that was done by an irresponsible government that continues to, you know, mound down this nonsense of net zero. And the net zero isn't just about EV mandates. It's about carbon taxes. It's about emission caps. It's about blocking pipelines. It's about preventing Canadian resources from getting to the rest of the world. It's about coming up with stupid ideas like gender equality when it comes to a decision on how to build a pipeline. This is absolute woke madness. And you know what? The boomers may be able to pay for it because they got the nice pensions, but your kids and your grandchildren are in trouble and they're going to have to pay for it. Your arrogance, your ignorance, and your blissful willingness to go along with this is one of the main reasons why we can't afford any more debt in this country. We've already sunk ourselves to a position where the cupboards are bare, and frankly, these are truly becoming days known as dire straits.
They scrapped, the Liberals that is, scrapped the consumer carbon tax. They said, you know, we're listening to Canadians. This was unpopular. So let's go back to the EV mandate. You've got Auto Trader, for example, reporting EV interest dropped from 40% to 29% in 1 year. So, you know, why is Ottawa this time ignoring Canadians' clear preference for gas-powered vehicles? Why aren't they listening this time?
Well, because Canadians wouldn't listen to their own plight and gave them another reward. God knows why. I mean, if Canadians have seen government do some very bad things and not fight for their interests and sink the economy, is it any wonder that the government feels compelled to say it doesn't really matter, even if the numbers don't show the support there? You elected us to basically redo this whole thing, do another redux. And even though it's obviously eminently, patently impossible to achieve, we're still going to damn well do it because you were dumb enough to vote for it. And look, I take pleasure in saying people are dumb, but frankly, to have given a government another mandate to go out and do exactly what it's been doing for the past 10 years, except with a slicker face on it, and someone who talks about these great aspirational plans, has not put up a budget to say the situation in this country, how dire the situation is. My sense is that if that's what Canadians want, then Canadians are going to get it. But frankly, hold on to your bank accounts, because when they come for your things like your house, taxation on the principal residence, you'll have no one to blame but yourself.
Back to the G7 for a minute. They're talking energy security. Well, part of that clearly includes critical minerals for EV batteries. The G7 is focusing on that. China dominates the supply chains. So are we trading oil dependency for mineral reliance?
I'm not sure what's meant by all this. I mean, it'd be nice to say we could do mining, but we can't even do that in this country. The permitting time it takes to build anything here is enough to discourage most people not to want to invest in anything. What's the point? And if you do invest in it, you'll have every Tom, Dick, and Harry environmentalist out there pushing back on you. And the government's going to sit back like it did with the Trans Mountain pipeline, sit back and say, yeah, we know we gave you permission and you have all rights, but we'll let every alarmist catastrophist organization go out there and take pot shots at you, destroy, vandalize some of your equipment, and play the lawfare game and hold it up in the courts. So, what does that mean? Well, with that one project alone, with British Columbia saying we'll use every tool in the toolbox, I remember it very well because I went up against the premier of the day, Horgan, and challenged him on many media and said, does he have an idea what he's going to do? Wound up costing you and I $34 billion. It's on the books. That's what happens when you sort of want to be trendy and cute and you want to say, well, what I'm driving at here, When the government says it's going to do something and then can't do it, can't fulfill it, I don't care what commitments you've made. You've already told the rest of the world, as you have here in Canada, very bluntly, we're not open for business. We'll sell you some hydrogen. We'll sell you some stuff from windmills. That's insane, and that's what's happened. I don't trust, and nor should the business community trust anything the Canadian government says, because, frankly, they've renounced and gone back on the word many, many times, and as I said before, in order to curry favor with their net zero environmentalist climate bedwetting crowd, they basically made Canada a very risky place to put any kind of money if it comes to exploiting minerals or resources.
Ford Canada warning that EV mandates are going to tank sales and they're going to raise prices. And we've already discussed the tariffs. If the tariffs don't end the auto industry in Canada, the EV mandates seem ready to do the job. I mean, how is the auto industry going to cope with these EV mandates if sales for EV automobiles are just plummeting?
Well, maybe I feel like Doug Ford should be spending a bit more time trying to convince Mark Carney to get off it rather than going down to Boston and saying what a great job they're doing. Look, we're going to lose our industry. We're going to lose those big plants. And with them, we're going to lose tens of thousands of jobs in Ontario. And it won't just be the steel industry. It won't be the automotive industry. It's the secondary jobs as well. Go ahead. Go down this road. At the end of the day, no one wants to build batteries because they can't. The only kind they can is when they can bankrupt themselves or take money from the government and the people before they do decide to go and take the money elsewhere. But every major auto manufacturer has an option. They don't have to stay in Canada. Hell, they can go to Mexico. They can, you know, they can bring it from home. It's just there's no advantage being given to them to staying in Canada. And the advantage that we had 10, 15 years ago is quickly evaporated. And so I would be very careful. If we don't have an industrial manufacturing policy that emphasizes what people actually want to buy in Canada and around the world without being forced or tricked or bribed into buying one of these woke vehicles, then we're going to wind up in a position where you'll be having that one beautiful, spanky electric vehicle in front of you, but you won't have the means to pay for it, much less plug it into the wall, pay for the electricity, much less make ends meet to pay for the mortgage or the rent on your home. And that's where we're heading. Like it or not, anyone thinks it's no big deal. The country is in a real, real tough position, and it's not going to come out by good intentions, repeating and putting a new coat of paint on very bad public policy. And that's where we are with Mark Carney. He's not saying anything different than what Justin Trudeau. Trudeau was a goof. This man is very smart. But his eloquence is not going to in any way remove or derogate or take away from the fact that he's proposing pretty much the same thing. And this is the man who said, let's divest from oil and gas. Let's change the system, the capitalism. Let's have a carbon tax. However they describe it, whatever it is they're doing, whatever machinations they're undertaking, I want to see real evidence that they're prepared to punt net zero. Nix net zero. I hashtagged that a little while ago. I don't think Liberals are going to do it. And I think Canadians, to the extent that they do realize that some problems are going to realize, it's not just getting rid of the carbon tax temporarily is a far cry from the intentional political damage, policy damage that you've done to the economy and social disintegration that I think comes when you have one region of the country saying, we want to get ahead by selling resources, but if you're going to block us, why the hell should we be paying you guys billions of dollars in equalization? We'd be better to basically find another arrangement. And that starts with getting rid out of the Canada Pension Plan. That should send a strong message beyond any talk of alienation.
Just getting back to infrastructure for a moment required for the EV mandate. I mentioned earlier, less than 5% of the charging ports exist that are required by 2040. 30,000 we need 680,000. What about the power grid itself? Yeah. I mean, how ill-equipped is the current no pun intended, the current power grid to take on all of these charging stations and people plugging in at home in their garage?
Well, wait till you get governments like Quebec, which says, oh, yeah, we have tons of power. Oh, by the way, during winter, please don't plug in at night. I mean, we saw, Norway did the same thing. We're seeing this all over the place where, use them, but don't use them at night. Don't charge them when we ask them. And they will have the ability to turn these things off. And basically say, no, you're not powering up until we tell you so. We can go down this whole idea of, command and control, and there may be an attempt to say, well, these things are a little easier to manipulate. A person with an internal combustion engine, a 2020 F-150 EcoBoost six-cylinder can put, fill up a tank and go 1,300 kilometers to get the hell out of Dodge before these guys have any attempt to try to control them. But there is this idea that people are creating a problem. People are the problem to the climate. And it's no wonder that some of these pieces are starting to fit in place where they want you to drive a certain type of vehicle, which frankly is garbage. And I, you know, it's nice to have toys. If I want to drive my computer, I'll put a skateboard under it and go driving around with it. In the meantime, I want something that's practical, something I can carry my kids, carry my equipment, take me 300,000, 400,000, 600,000 kilometers before it needs another motor changed, versus an electric vehicle with a battery that's probably going to go after no more than 6 or 7 years. And when it does, you're out of luck.
So the U.S. is scrapping EV mandates. Europe is rethinking its 2035 ban. Is DeBrusen and Carney, are they just whistling past the graveyard? How much longer are they going to continue with this EV mandate charade?
Well, as long as the media won't hold them to account and won't ask the tough questions of them. And we have to look at the automotive sector in Europe is flat on its back. Mercedes is pulling out. Porsche can't do work over there. They're looking for alternative places in order to build because they can't meet these conditions, nor can they afford the cost of energy to run manufacturing. So the manufacturing hub of the world for the past half century is no longer. It's hollowed out. And so while we can go out there and celebrate, you know, these little things in the field, you know, twisting at the winds, or solar panels, much of which are made with some of the most corrosive and most harmful processes to make the solar panels, or we can pretend that, the products needed to make a windmill blade, which can never be recycled, or EV batteries, which can never be recycled, we can pretend that everything is just fine. That's the brave new world. The reality, thermodynamics, and of course science and economics no longer supports what has been, a permission given to people to go out and exploit the idea of net zero and climate to the extent that they try to rearrange and rewrite our economies. And as a result, we're suffering. We're suffering not because of bad actors, but because bad public policy has taken us to a point where we've traded away the things that are very good of our economy. I mean, look, as a fellow who worked long before in politics in the automotive sector, it's truly amazing that what took an 8-cylinder vehicle in 1974 to produce, you can do with the same amount of power using technology, transmissions, better fuel, emissions that are 1/50th of a vehicle that was on the road prior to the catalytic converter. So I think as technology evolves, we can continue to make the internal combustion engine that much more efficient, but we have to do it as breakthroughs in science permits, not as trendy politicians and their bureaucratic friends, you know, sitting with their pipes and the old patches on their things and desert boots. I'm, of course, giving an analogy of a bureaucrat from the 1970s. But, you know, if technocrats think that this is a smart way of conducting society, why don't they just admit that their problem is population? They don't like population, and they certainly don't like the trend ahead for this country. How are you going to support 100 million people in this country by the end of the century? It's impossible. And you're not going to be able to do it. You talk to the electrical grid. Yeah, sure. I mean, we've got tons of reactors. Here's one from, you know, 1966. It's the Pickering nuclear facility built on September the 11th, or it started in 1965. We knew how to build things because there was a purpose for these things. Get energy out there. Attract industry, get cheaper energy, and we can move ahead. We've lost our way, and unfortunately, by going down this Pied Piper path of climate nonsense, we've put ourselves in a very, very dangerous position. We've tried to convince and con people into believing the sky is falling and that we can somehow control the weather. So all these little widgets that we put on with these, Richard, all these other wonderful little inventions, novelties, they're great as prototypes in an autoclave, but they're not meant for practical, wider use, and they're certainly not going to help improve the human condition, which is what generations have been doing now in this country.
Dan McTagg, president of Canadians for Affordable Energy. Dan, thank you as always. Appreciate your time.
Always a pleasure. Yeah, thanks, Richard.
All right, that's it for me. I'll speak with you again real soon. In the meantime, I remain unbowed, unbent, unbroken.